Good. Elland used a charcoal stick to circle another section on the city map before him.
What about here?
Demo scratched his chin.
Grainfield? That's a nobleman's neighborhood, my lord.
It used to be. Grainfield was filled with cousin houses to the Ventures. When my father pulled out of the city, so did most of them.
Then we'll probably find the homes filled with Ska transients, I'd guess.
Move them out.
Excuse me, my lord?
The two stood in Keep Venture's large carriage landing. Soldiers moved in a bustle through the spacious room. Many of them didn't wear uniforms. They weren't on official city business. Elland was no longer king, but they had still come at his request.
We need to move the Ska out of those homes. Noblemen's homes are mostly stone mansions with a lot of small rooms. They're extremely hard to heat, requiring a separate hearth or a stove for every room. The Ska tenements are depressing, but they have massive hearths and open rooms.
Demo nodded slowly.
The Lord Ruler couldn't have his workers freezing. Those tenements are the best way to efficiently look after a large population of people with limited resources.
I understand, my lord.
Don't force them, Demo. My personal guard, even augmented with army volunteers, has no official authority in the city. If a family wants to stay in their pilfered aristocratic house, let them. Just make certain they know that there's an alternative to freezing.
Demo moved on to pass on the commands. Elland turned as a messenger arrived.
You're on the demolition scout group, correct?
The man nodded as he bowed. He wasn't in uniform. He was a soldier, not one of Elland's guards. He was a younger man with a square jaw, balding head, and honest smile.
Don't I know you?
I helped you a year ago, my lord. I led you into the Lord Ruler's palace to help rescue Lady Vin.
Goradel, you used to be in the Lord Ruler's personal guard.
I joined up in your army after that day. Seemed like the thing to do.
Not my army anymore, Goradel, but I do appreciate you coming to help us today. What's your report?
You were right, my lord. The Ska have already robbed the empty homes for furniture. But not many thought of the walls. A good half of the abandoned mansions have wooden walls on the inside, and a lot of the tenements were made of wood. Most all of them have wooden roofs.
Good.
Elland surveyed the gathering mass of men. He hadn't told them his plans. He'd simply asked for volunteers to help him with some manual labor. He hadn't expected the response to number in the hundreds.
It looks like we're gathering quite a group, my lord.
Elland nodded, giving leave for Goradel to withdraw.
We'll be able to try an even more ambitious project than I'd planned.
My lord, are you certain you want to start tearing the city down around ourselves?
We either lose buildings or we lose people, Demo. The buildings go.
And if the king tries to stop us?
Then we obey. But I don't think Lord Penrod will object. He's too busy trying to get a bill through the assembly that hands the city over to my father. Besides, it's probably better for him to have these men here working than it is to have them sitting and worrying in the barracks.
Demo fell silent. Elland did as well. Both knew how precarious their position was. Only a short time had passed since the assassination attempt and the transfer of power, and the city was in shock. Set was still holed up inside of Keep Hasting, and his armies had moved into position to attack the city. Luthadel was like a man with a knife pressed very closely to his throat. Each breath cut the skin.
I can't do much about that now. I have to make certain the people don't freeze these next few nights.
He could feel the bitter cold despite the daylight, his cloak, and the shelter. There were a lot of people in Luthadel. But if he could get enough men tearing down enough buildings, he just might be able to do some good.
My lord.
Elland turned as a short man with a drooping mustache approached.
Ah, Felt, you have news?
The man was working on the poisoned food problem, specifically how the city was being breached.
I do indeed, my lord. We interrogated the refugees with a rioter, and we came up dry. Then, however, I started thinking. The refugees seemed too obvious to me. Strangers in the city? Of course they'd be the first ones we'd suspect. I figured with how much has been going wrong with the wells and the food and the like, someone has to be sneaking in and out of the city.
Elland nodded. They'd been watching Set soldiers inside Keep Hasting very carefully, and none of them was responsible. Straff's Mistborn was still a possibility, but Vin had never believed that he was behind the poisoning. Elland hoped that the trail, if it could be found, would lead back to someone in his own palace, hopefully revealing who on his serving staff had been replaced by a Chandra.
Well?
I interrogated the people who run Passwalls. I don't think they're to blame.
Passwalls?
covert passages out of the city, tunnels or the like.
Such things exist?
Of course, my lord. Moving between cities was very difficult for Ska thieves during the Lord Ruler's reign. Everyone who entered Luthadel was subject to interview and interrogation. So, ways to get into the city covertly were very prevalent. Most of those have shut down, the ones who used to lower people up and down by ropes over the walls. A few are still running, but I don't think they are letting the spies in. Once that first well was poisoned, the pass walls all got paranoid that you'd come after them. Since then, they've only been letting people out of the city, ones who want to run from the besieged city and the like.
Elland frowned. He wasn't certain what he thought of the fact that people were disobeying his order, that the gates be shut, with no passage out.
Next, I tried the river.
We thought of that. The grates covering the water are all secure.
That they are. I sent some men down under the water to search about, and we found several locks down below keeping the river gates in place.
What?
Someone pried the grates free, my lord, then locked them back into place so it wouldn't look suspicious. That way, they could swim in and out at their leisure. You want us to replace the grates?
No. No, just replace those locks with new ones, then post men to watch. Next time those prisoners try to get into the city, I want them to find themselves trapped.
Felt nodded, retreating with a happy smile on his face. His talents as a spy hadn't been put to much good use lately, and he seemed to be enjoying the tasks Elland was giving him. Elland made a mental note to think about putting Felt to work on locating the Chandra spy, assuming, of course, that Felt himself wasn't the spy.
My lord, I think I might be able to offer a second opinion on how the poisonings are occurring.
Oh?
Demo nodded, waving for a man to approach from the side of the room. He was younger, perhaps 18, and had the dirty face and clothing of a ska worker.
This is Larn, a member of my congregation.
The young man bowed to Elland, posture nervous.
You may speak, Larn. Tell Lord Venture what you saw.
Well, my lord, I tried to go tell this to the king. The new king, I mean.
It's all right. Continue.
Well, the men there turned me away. Said the king didn't have time for me. So I came to Lord Demo. I figured he might believe me.
About what?
Inquisitor, my lord. I saw one in the city.
You're sure?
I've lived in Luthadel all my life, my lord. Watched executions a number of times. I'd recognize one of those monsters, sure I would. I saw him. Spikes through the eyes, tall and robed, slinking about at night. Near the center squares of the city, I promise you.
Elland shared a look with Demo.
He's not the only one, my lord. Some other members of my congregation claim to have seen an Inquisitor hanging around Credic's Shaw. I dismissed the first few, but Larn, he's trustworthy. If he said he saw something, he did. Eyes nearly as good as a tin eye, that one.
Elland nodded slowly and ordered a patrol from his personal guard to keep watch in the area indicated. After that, he turned his attention back to the wood-gathering effort. He gave the orders, organizing the men into teams, sending some to begin working, others to gather recruits. Without fuel, many of the city's forges had shut down, and the workers were idle. They could use something to occupy their time. Elland saw energy in the men's eyes as they began to split up. He knew that determination, that firmness of eye and arm. It came from the satisfaction of doing something, not just sitting around and waiting for fate or kings to act. Elland turned back to the map, making a few notations. From the corner of his eye, he saw Ham saunter in.
So this is where they all went. The sparring grounds are empty.
Elland looked up, smiling.
You're back to the uniform, then?
Elland glanced down at his white outfit, designed to stand out, to set him apart from a city stained by ash.
Yes.
Too bad. Nobody should have to wear a uniform.
Elland raised an eyebrow. In the face of undeniable winter, Ham had finally taken to wearing a shirt beneath his vest. He wore no cloak or coat, however. Elland turned back to the map.
The clothing suits me. It just feels right. Anyway, that vest of yours is as much a uniform as this is.
No, it's not.
Oh? Nothing screams thug like a man who goes about in the winter without a coat, Ham. You've used your clothing to change how people react to you, to let them know who you are and what you represent, which is essentially what a uniform does.
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
What? You've never argued about something like this with Breeze?
Ham shook his head as he turned to look over the groups of men, listening to the men Elland had appointed to give orders.
He's changed. Running this city, dealing with all of this, it's even changed him.
The thug was more solemn now, more focused. Of course, he had even more stake in the city's safety than the rest of the crew. It was sometimes hard to remember that the free-spirited thug was a family man. Ham tended not to talk much about Mardra or his two children. Ellen suspected it was habit. Ham had spent much of his marriage living apart from his family in order to keep them safe.
This whole city is my family.
Ellen watched the soldiers leave to do their work. Some might have thought something as simple as gathering firewood to be a mundane task, of little relevance in a city threatened by three armies. However, Ellen knew that the freezing Ska people would receive the fuel with as much appreciation as they would salvation from the armies. The truth was that Ellen felt a little like his soldiers did. He felt a satisfaction, a thrill even, from doing something, anything, to help.
What if Set's attack comes? A good portion of the army will be scattered out through the city.
Even if we have 1,000 men in my teams, that's not much of a dent in our forces. Besides, Clubs thinks there will be plenty of time to gather them. We've got messengers set up.
Ellen looked back at his map.
Anyway, I don't think Set's going to attack just yet. He's pretty safe in that keep there. We'll never take him. We'd have to pull too many men away from the city defenses, leaving ourselves exposed. The only thing he really has to worry about is my father.
What?
That's why Set is here. Don't you see? He intentionally left himself without options. If Straff attacks, Set's armies will end up fighting alongside our own. He's locked in his fate with ours.
Seems like a pretty desperate move.
Set is desperate for some reason. One I haven't been able to figure out. Anyway, by putting himself in here, he sides with us against Straff, whether we want the alliance or not.
But what if the Assembly gives the city to Straff? If our men join with him and attack Set?
That's the gamble he took. Set never intended to be able to walk away from the confrontation here in Luthadel. He intends to take the city or be destroyed. He's waiting, hoping Straff will attack, worrying that we'll give in to him. But neither can happen as long as Straff is afraid of Ven. A three-way standoff, with the Kolos as a fourth element that nobody can predict.
Someone needed to do something to tip the scales.
DeMo, are you ready to take over here?
Captain DeMo looked over, nodding. Ellen turned to Ham.
How insane are you feeling at the moment?
Ellen led his horse out of the tunnel into the scraggly landscape outside of Luthadel. He turned, craning to look up at the wall. Hopefully, the soldiers there had gotten his message and wouldn't mistake him for a spy or a scout from one of the enemy armies. He'd rather not end up in Tyndall's histories as the ex-king who died by an arrow from one of his own men. Ham led a small, grizzled woman from the tunnel. As Ellen had guessed, Ham had easily found a suitable pass wall to get them out of the city.
Well, there you go.
Thank you, good woman. You have served your dominance well this day.
The woman raised an eyebrow, though from what Ellen could tell, she was quite nearly blind. Ellen smiled, pulling out a pouch and handing it to her. She reached into it with gnarled but surprisingly dexterous fingers and counted out the contents.
3 extra?
To pay you to leave a scout here, to watch for our return.
Return? You aren't running?
No, I just have some business with one of the armies.
Well, none of Granny's business. For 3 clips, I can find a grandson to sit out here for a few hours. Lord Ruler knows I have enough of them.
Ham watched her go, a spark of fondness in his eyes.
How long have you known about this place?
Oh, I've known this for years and years. Granny Hilda used to give me sweets when I was a kid. Of course, that was really just a cheap way of getting some quiet, yet well-targeted publicity for her pass wall. When I was grown, I used to use this to sneak Mardra and the kids in and out of the city when they came to visit.
Wait, you grew up in Luthadel?
Of course.
On the streets, like Vin?
Not really like Vin. I don't really think anyone grew up like Vin. I had Ska parents, my grandfather was the nobleman. I was involved with the underground, but I had my parents for a good portion of my childhood. Besides, I was a boy, and a large one. I suspect that makes a big difference.
Ellen nodded.
You're not going to shut this place down, are you?
Why would I?
It doesn't exactly seem like the kind of enterprise that you would approve of. There are probably people fleeing from the city nightly through this hole. Granny Hilda is known to take coin and not ask questions, even if she does grumble at you a bit.
Ham did have a point. That was probably why he didn't talk about the place until Ellen specifically asked. Ham and his friends walked a fine line, close to their old ties with the underground, yet working hard to build up the government they'd sacrificed so much to create.
I'm not king.
Elland led his horse away from the city.
What Granny Hilda does is not any of my business.
Ham moved up beside him, looking relieved. Elland could see that relief dissipate, however, as the reality of what they were doing settled in.
I don't like this, El.
They stopped walking as Elland mounted.
Neither do I.
Ham nodded.
My old nobleman friends would have tried to talk me out of this. Why did I surround myself with people who had been loyal to the survivor? They expect their leaders to take irrational risks.
I'll go with you.
No, it won't make a difference. Stay here, wait to see if I get back. If I don't, tell Ven what happened.
Sure, I'll tell her. Then I'll proceed to remove her daggers from my chest. Just make sure you come back, all right?
Elland was barely paying attention. His eyes were focused on the army in the distance. An army without tents, carriages, food carts, or servants. An army who had eaten the foliage to the ground in a wide swath around them. Kolos. Sweat made the reins slick in Ellen's hands. This was different from before, when he'd gone into Straff's army and Set's keep. This time he was alone. Vin couldn't get him out if things went bad. She was still recovering from her wounds, and nobody knew what Ellen was doing but Ham.
What do I owe the people of this city? They rejected me. Why do I still insist on trying to protect them?
I recognize that look, El. Let's go back.
Elland closed his eyes. Then he snapped his eyes open and kicked his horse into a gallop. It had been years since he'd seen Kolos, and that experience had come only at his father's insistence. Straff hadn't trusted the creatures, and had never liked having garrisons of them in the Northern Dominance, one just a few days' march from his home city of Erto. Those Kolos had been a reminder, a warning, from the Lord Ruler. Elland rode his horse hard, as if using its momentum to bolster his own will. Aside from one brief visit to the Erto Kolos garrison, everything he knew of the creatures came from books. But Tyndall's instruction had weakened his once absolute and slightly naive trust in his learning.
It will have to be enough.
He gritted his teeth, slowing his animal as he approached a wandering squad of Kolos. It was as he remembered. One large creature, its skin revoltingly split and cracked by stretch marks, led a few medium-sized beasts whose bleeding rips were only beginning to appear at the corners of their mouths and the edges of their eyes. A smattering of smaller creatures, their baggy skin loose and sagging beneath their eyes and arms, accompanied their betters. Elland reined in his horse next to the largest beast.
Take me to Jost.
Get off your horse.
Elland looked the creature directly in the eyes. Atop his horse, he was nearly the same height.
Take me to Jost.
The Kolos regarded him with a set of beady, unreadable eyes. It bore a rip from one eye to the other, above the nose, a secondary rip curving down to one of the nostrils. The nose itself was pulled so tight it was twisted and flattened. This was the moment. The book said the creature would either do as commanded or simply attack him.
Come.
The Kolos turned to walk back toward the camp. The rest of the creatures surrounded Elland's horse. Elland kept a tight hold on his reins and nudged the animal forward. He should have felt good at his small victory, but his tension only increased. They moved forward into the Kolos camp. It was like being swallowed, like letting a rock slide collapse around you. Kolos looked up as he passed, watching him with their red, emotionless eyes. Many others just stood silently around their cooking fires, unresponsive, like men who had been born dull-minded and witless. The creatures wore the wide, brutish iron swords that Sazed had described. The bigger the Kolos, the bigger the weapon. When a Kolos reached a size where he thought he needed a larger sword, he had only two choices: find one that had been discarded, or kill someone and take theirs. A Kolos population could often be crudely controlled by increasing or decreasing the number of swords available to the group. None of the scholars knew how the creatures bred. As Sazed had explained, these Kolos also had strange little pouches tied to their sword straps.
What are they? Sazed said he saw the largest Kolos carrying 3 or 4, but that one leading my group has almost 20.
Even the small Kolos in Ellen's group had 3 pouches.
That's the difference. Whatever is in those pouches, could it be the way Jost controls the creatures?
There was no way to know, save begging one of the pouches off a Kolos, and he doubted they would let them go. As he moved through the camp, he noticed another oddity. Some of the Kolos were wearing clothing. Before, he'd seen them only in loincloths, as Sazed had reported. Yet many of these Kolos had pants, shirts, or skirts pulled onto their bodies. They wore the clothing without regard for size, and most pieces were so tight they had torn. Others were so loose they had to be tied on. Elland saw a few of the larger Kolos wearing garments like bandanas tied around their arms or heads.
We are not Kolos.
The lead Kolos turned to Elland as they walked.
Explain.
You think we are Kolos. We are humans. We will live in your city. We will kill you, and we will take it.
Elland shivered, realizing the source of the mismatched garments. They had come from the village that the Kolos had attacked, the one whose refugees had trickled into Luthadel. This appeared to be a new development in Kolos thinking. Or had it always been there, repressed by the Lord Ruler? The scholar in Elland was fascinated. The rest of him was simply horrified. His Kolos guide paused before a small group of tents, the only such structures in the camp. Elland fought to keep his mount from throwing him as the Kolos jumped and attacked one of its companions, proceeding to pummel it with a massive fist. Elland won his struggle. The lead Kolos, however, did not. Elland climbed off his horse, patting the beast on the neck as the victimized Kolos pulled his sword from the chest of his former leader. The survivor, who now bore several cuts in his skin that hadn't come from stretching, bent down to harvest the pouches tied to the corpse's back. Elland watched with a muted fascination as the Kolos stood.
He never was a good leader.
I can't let these monsters attack my city. I have to do something.
Elland pulled his horse forward, turning his back on the Kolos as he entered the secluded section of camp, watched over by a group of nervous young men in uniforms. Elland handed his reins to one of them.
Take care of this for me.
Wait! Halt!
Elland turned sharply, facing the shorter man, who was trying to both level his spear at Elland and keep an eye on the Kolos. Elland didn't try to be harsh. He just wanted to keep his own anxiety under control and keep moving. Either way, the resulting glare probably would have impressed even Tyndall.
I am Elland Venture. You know that name?
The man nodded.
You may announce me to Lord Lacall. Just get to the tent before I do.
The young man took off at a dash. Elland followed, striding up to the tent, where other soldiers stood hesitantly.
What must it have done to them, living surrounded by Kolos, so terribly outnumbered?
Feeling a stab of pity, he didn't try to bully his way in.
Let him in.
Elland brushed past the guards and threw open the tent flap. The months had not been kind to Jas Lacall. Somehow, the few wisps of hair on his head looked far more pathetic than complete baldness would have. His suit was sloppy and stained, his eyes underlined by a pair of deep bags. He raised a quivering hand to push back hair he didn't have.
Elland, what in the Lord Ruler's name happened to you?
Responsibility, Jas. It appears that neither of us were ready for it.
Out!
Jas waved to his guards. They shuffled past Elland, closing the tent flap behind them.
It's been a while, Elland.
Elland nodded.
I remember those days, sitting in your den or mine, sharing a drink with Teldon. Huh. We were so innocent, weren't we?
Innocent, but hopeful.
Want something to drink?
Jas turned toward the room's desk. Elland eyed the bottles and flasks lying in the corner of the room. They were all empty. Jas moved a full bottle from the desk and poured Elland a small cup. The size and clear color, an indication that this was no simple dinner wine. Elland accepted the small cup, but did not drink.
What happened, Jas? How did the clever, thoughtful philosopher I knew turn into a tyrant?
Tyrant? I'm no tyrant. Your father's the tyrant. I'm just a realist.
Sitting at the center of a Kolos army doesn't seem to be a very realistic position to me.
I can control them.
And Suizna? The village they slaughtered?
That was an unfortunate accident.
Elland looked down at the drink in his hand and threw it aside.
This isn't my father's den, and we are not friends any longer. I will call no man friend who leads something like this against my city. What happened to your honor, Jas Lacall?
Jas glanced at the spilled liquor.
That's always been the problem with you, Elland. So certain, so optimistic, so self-righteous.
It was our optimism. We wanted to change things, Jas, not destroy them.
Is that so? You want to know why I'm here, Elland? Did you even pay attention to what was happening in the Southern Dominance while you played in Lutherdell?
I'm sorry about what happened to your family, Jost.
Sorry? You're sorry? I implemented your plans, Elland. I did everything we talked about. Freedom, political honesty. I trusted my allies rather than crushing them into submission. And you know what happened?
Elland closed his eyes.
They killed everyone, Elland. That's what you do when you take over. You kill your rivals and their families, even the young girls, even the babies, and you leave their bodies as a warning. That's good politics. That's how you stay in power.
It's easy to believe in something when you win all the time, Jost.
Elland opened his eyes.
The losses are what define a man's faith.
Losses? My sister was a loss?
No, I mean...
Enough! Guards!
Two men threw back the tent flap and moved into the room.
Take His Majesty captive. Send a messenger to the city. Tell them we want to negotiate.
I'm not king anymore, Jost.
What?
Do you think I'd come here and let myself get captured if I were king? They deposed me. The assembly invoked a no-confidence clause and chose a new king.
You bloody idiot.
Losses, Jost. It hasn't been as hard for me as it was for you, but I do think I understand.
So that fancy suit and haircut didn't save you, eh?
Take your Kolos and go, Jost.
That sounds like a threat, Elland. You aren't king. You don't have an army, and I don't see your Mistborn around. What grounds do you have for threats?
They're Kolos. Do you really want them getting into the city? It's your home, Jost, where it was once. There are thousands of people inside.
I can control my army.
No, I doubt you can. What happened, Jost? Did they decide they needed a king? They decided that's the way that humans did it, so they should do it too? What is it that they carry in those pouches? What happens when one of them just snaps and attacks you?
I'm sorry, Elland. I can't let Straff get the ATM.
And my people?
Jost paused only briefly, then lowered his eyes and motioned to the guards. One laid a hand on Elland's shoulder. Elland's reaction surprised even himself. He slammed his elbow up into the man's face, shattering his nose, then took the other man down with a kick to the leg. Elland jumped forward, pulled an obsidian knife, given to him by Vin, from his boot, and caught Jost by the shoulder. Elland slammed the man around, pushing him backward onto the desk, and, barely thinking to consider his actions, rammed the knife into his old friend's shoulder.
If killing you would do anything useful, Jost, I'd do it right now. But I don't know how you control these things, and I don't want to set them loose.
As soldiers piled into the room, Elland didn't look up.
You listen. I don't care if you've been hurt. I don't care if you don't believe in the philosophies anymore, and I don't really care if you get yourself killed playing politics with Straff and Set. But I do care if you threaten my people. I want you to march your army out of my dominance. Go attack Straff's homeland, or maybe Set's. They're both undefended. I promise I won't let your enemies get the ATM. And as a friend, I'll give you a bit of counsel. Think about that wound in your arm for a little while, Jost. I was your best friend, and I nearly killed you. What the hell are you doing sitting in the middle of an entire army of deranged Kolos?
Soldiers surrounded him. Elland stood, ripping the knife from Jast's body and spinning the man around, pressing the weapon against his throat.
I'm leaving.
Elland pushed the confused Jast ahead of him, moving out of the tent. He noticed with some concern that there were barely a dozen human guards. Sazed had counted more. Where had Jast lost them? There was no sign of Elland's horse, so he kept a wary eye on the soldiers, pulling Jost toward the invisible line between the human camp and the Kolos one. Elland turned as he reached the perimeter, then pushed Jost back toward his men. They caught him, one pulling out a bandage for the arm. Others made moves as if to chase Elland, but they paused, hesitant. Elland had crossed the line into the Kolos camp. He stood quietly watching the pathetic group of young soldiers, Jost at their center. Even as they ministered to him, Elland could see the look in Jast's eyes. Hatred. He wouldn't retreat. The man Elland had known was dead, replaced by this product of a new world that didn't kindly regard philosophers and idealists. Elland turned away, walking among the Kolos. A group of them quickly approached. The same one as before? He couldn't tell for certain.
Take me out!
Elland met the eyes of the largest Kolos in the team. Either Elend seemed more commanding now, or this Koloss was more easily cowed, for there was no argument. The creature simply nodded and began to shuffle out of the camp, his team surrounding Elend.
This trip was a waste. All I did was antagonize Jost. I risked my life for nothing. If only I could find out what was in those pouches.
He eyed the group of Koloss around him. It was a typical group, ranging in size from 5 feet to 1 10-foot monstrosity. They walked along with slumped, unengaged postures. Elend still had his knife out.
This is stupid.
For some reason, that didn't stop him from choosing the smallest Koloss in the group. The rest of the Koloss paused to watch. The creature Elend had chosen spun, but in the wrong direction. It turned to face its companion Koloss, the one nearest to it in size. As Elend tackled it, ramming the knife into its back, even at 5 feet with a small build, the Koloss was incredibly strong. It tossed him off. Elend, however, managed to keep hold of his dagger.
Can't let it get out that sword.
He scrambled to his feet and rammed his knife into the creature's thigh. The Koloss dropped again, punching at Elend with one arm, fingers reaching for its sword with the other. Elend took the punch to the chest and fell back to the sooty ground. The Koloss pulled out its sword, but had trouble standing. Both knife wounds bled stark red blood. The liquid seemed brighter, more reflective than that of a human. But that might have just been a contrast with the deep blue skin. The Koloss finally managed to gain its feet, and Elend realized his mistake. He'd let the adrenaline of his confrontation with Jast, his frustration at his inability to stop the armies, drive him. He'd sparred a lot lately, but he was in no position to take a Koloss. But it was far too late to worry about that now. Elend rolled out of the way as a thick club-like sword smashed to the ground beside him. Instincts overrode terror, and he mostly managed to avoid the backswing. It took him a bit in the side, spraying a patch of blood across his once white uniform, but he barely even felt the cut.
Only one way to win a knife fight against a guy with a sword.
Elend gripped his knife. The thought, oddly, hadn't come from one of his trainers or even from Vin. He wasn't sure where it had come from, but he trusted it.
Close in tight as fast as possible and kill quickly.
And Elend attacked. The Koloss swung as well. Elend could see the attack, but couldn't do anything about it. He could only throw himself forward, knife raised. He rammed his knife into the Koloss's eye, barely managing to get inside the creature's reach. Even so, the hilt of the sword hit him in the stomach. Both dropped. Elend slowly became aware of the hard, ash-packed earth and weeds eaten down to their roots. A fallen twig was scratching his cheek. Odd that he would notice that, considering the pain in his chest. He stumbled to his feet. The Koloss he'd attacked did not rise. Its companions stood, looking unconcerned, though their eyes were focused on him. They seemed to want something.
He ate my horse.
The group of Koloss nodded. Elend stumbled forward, wiping the ash from his cheek with a dazed hand as he knelt beside the dead creature. He ripped his knife out, then slid it back in his boot. Next, he unfastened the pouches. This Koloss had two. Finally, not certain why, he grabbed the creature's large sword and rested it up on his shoulder. It was so weighty that he could barely carry it, and certainly wouldn't be able to swing it.
How does a creature so small use something like this?
The Koloss watched him work without comment. Then they led him out of the camp. Once they had retreated, Elend pulled open one of the pouches and looked inside. He shouldn't have been surprised by what he found. Jast had decided to control his army the old-fashioned way. He was paying them.